The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service and the Associated Press. First of all, a piece from the Religion News Service published on the 7th of October, 2022, entitled, Are the Culture Wars Changing How Christian Students Choose Colleges? By Catherine Post. These days, politics can influence everything from the dairy products you consume to whether you drink Pepsi or Coke. For some religious families, politics are also revamping the college decision process, swaying them away from colleges marked too liberal or too conservative. Though there are Protestant colleges that welcome political labels, others strive to remain as apolitical as possible. For the latter, it's an increasing challenge to preserve their religious identity, which invariably has political implications in today's supercharged environment, while welcoming students of all political backgrounds. I think Christians are discipled by political debates, sometimes more than they are really discipled by Christ or Christianity, said Ruth Curran Nailed, whose son recently withdrew from Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania, over concerns about the school's politics. Last year, the college was mired in a culture war debate over whether the conservative school had promoted critical race theory. A highly contentious board-approved report ruled it had. I saw the report come back from subcommittee, and I was gobsmacked, said Nailed, whose son had committed to the college in early November 2021. In her view, the board had taken the bait and engaged what she saw as a manufactured crisis over an ultra-conservative boogeyman. I thought they failed to want to listen to genuine cries of pain from marginalized communities, said Nailed. It wasn't grounded in shared Christian beliefs. It was at the level of politics. Nailed, who lives in New Jersey and belongs to a Presbyterian Church in America congregation, told RNS that initially Grove City's location, Christian identity, and strong computer science program made it seem like an easy fit. But the board's decision led to a family conversation in May, and after much thought, Nail said her son opted for Messiah College, a school in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, that their family perceived as more politically neutral. While several parents who spoke to RNS for this story said they tried to steer students away from Christian schools that embrace MAGA, as one mother put it, other parents voiced an opposing concern. They worried about what they saw as an encroachment of liberal values on traditional religious beliefs. Amy Miller, who lives near Philadelphia and also attends a PCA church, told RNS her son transferred to Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, this year from Muhlenberg College, a liberal arts college in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Miller said the switch was related to Liberty's Reserve Officers Training Corps program and its conservative, Bible-believing Christian culture. She described Liberty as refreshing and as an oasis, where students can be bolstered in their Christ-centered beliefs before being daily bombarded by opposing worldviews. That's why I would definitely push all the rest of my kids to Christian colleges, said Miller, who expressed concern for how the broader culture approached questions related to gender and sexuality. Miller also noted not all Christian colleges would be a good fit for her family. I think Wheaton College, my husband would say our kids cannot go there because he thinks that they're a little bit more liberal. John Fay, professor of American history at Messiah College, believes there is a widening rift in the Christian college landscape between evangelical colleges open to political and, in some cases, theological diversity, and those that embrace a uniformly conservative identity. You really see conservative evangelicals who would have supported Trump, who questioned vaccine and mask mandates, who are worried about critical race theory, gravitating toward your Liberties, Hillsdales, and Cedarvilles. I think it's going to create a split. It's not surprising that politics have become a factor in some Christians' college calculations, given their growing influence on social interactions. An August NBC survey of over 1,000 rising college sophomores found that 62% of Democrats and 28% of Republicans said they would not room with someone who supported the opposite 2020 presidential candidate. More than half of all students said they either definitely or probably would not go on a date with a person who supported the opposing candidate. Political issues can also earn Christian colleges national media attention. Just last year, Seattle Pacific University, Calvin University, and Samford University made headlines for internal clashes over LGBTQ rights, while Grove City and Cornerstone University drew attention for their approach to race and racism. At Seattle Pacific University in Seattle, Washington, students staged sit-ins outside the president's office this spring in response to a board vote that upheld the school's hiring policy, requiring employees to reflect a traditional view on biblical marriage and sexuality. "We have lost a number of students over that," Michelle McFarlane, Director of Enrollment Services at Seattle Pacific, said. "There are lots of welcoming spaces here for students, but it was the representation of faculty and staff where they were hoping to see the lived experience of being gay and being a follower of Jesus." McFarlane added that this year, prospective students and their families were more likely to ask about the school's policies around LGBTQ rights. According to Brianna Dieters, a freshman nursing major at Calvin University in Grand Rapids, Michigan, politics are sometimes one of the first things students consider. "It's definitely a factor you look at in the college decision process. You see it's a Christian college and then immediately ask, what kind of Christian college is it?" said Dieters. Though she's only been at Calvin a short while, she said she already appreciates how Calvin engages with hot topics from both sides in chapels and other events. Some scholars argue that while political divisions feel new, older iterations have always embellished the Christian college landscape. Rifts over evolution and biblical inerrancy, for example, rather than over vaccines or critical race theory. Moreover, admissions counselors for most of the 7 Christian colleges RNS connected with for this study maintain that affordability remains prospective students' top priority, not politics. And while some admissions representatives said they'd seen an increase in political questions from prospective students, others, like Mary Herridge at Baylor University, said politics still don't seem to be a major factor. At Wheaton College, an evangelical school in the Chicago suburbs, Chief Enrollment Management Officer Silvio Vasquez says he does often encounter folks who assume that Wheaton is liberal or conservative, but he hopes students won't draw too many conclusions without experiencing the school firsthand. Amanda Stagenborg, Chief Communications Officer for the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, a global association of more than 180 Christian higher education institutions, told RNS that when students and their families make snap decisions based on a school's perceived political identity, they miss the big picture. "A university is made of so many different things, not just a label of conservative or progressive. You have many different layers of academics, social clubs, and student life. You can't label an entire university in that respect, because everyone's experience could be different." Isaac Willer, a junior political science major at Grove City, told RNS that students and parents have a right to find colleges that mirror their values. "The problem arises," Willow said, When colleges allow political ideology to guide academic inquiry and become citadels and training camps for creating good little conservatives and good little liberals to go out and fight the culture wars, that's not what college is supposed to be. John Hawthorne, a retired sociologist who studies religion, politics, and higher ed, predicts that as a younger generation becomes less religious, prospective students will be more likely to avoid Christian colleges due to perceived political conservatism rather than perceived liberalism. There are not enough conservative parents out there to support all the conservative schools who want to show how conservative they are, said Hawthorne. Especially among Gen Z, smaller and smaller percentages every year are into those harder, more narrow, right-wing stances. Mary Elizabeth Parker, a junior international relations major at Samford College in Birmingham, Alabama, originally wanted to attend a progressive non-religious school anywhere but her home state. Especially growing up being far more left-leaning than the rest of my peers, I thought the only way to escape the evils I heard about the Republican Party and the red states was to go out of state for school and never come back. When financial challenges landed her at the Baptist University 2 hours away from the conservative community where she was raised, she cried for weeks. Years later, Parker says she's the happiest she has ever been. Now a campus tour guide and vice president of Samford Democrats, Parker says she loves engaging in honest academic dialogue about subjects that matter, even and perhaps especially when she disagrees with her peers. I would say if you do identify as a Christian, pray about it, Parker said about the college decision process. Whatever, wherever God is telling you, whatever God is putting on your heart, listen to that, whether it aligns with your political beliefs or not. Our next piece is also from the Religion News Service, entitled Pope Francis to Make Father of Migrants a Saint, published on the 7th of October and written by Claire Giangrave, Vatican City. Pope Francis canonized a 19th century bishop known as the Father of Migrants on October the 9th, sending a message to Catholic leaders of the importance the pontiff places on the care of refugees at a time when immigration is roiling politics, including in the Italian government at the Vatican's doorstep. Giovanni Battista Scalabrini, bishop of the northern Italian city of Piacenza from 1876 to 1905, lived at a time of mass migrations in Europe, brought by economic, industrial, and scientific changes that led millions to seek a new life in the Americas. Scalabrini's advocacy for immigrants created the foundation for the Church's pastoral approach to migration today. The Holy Father introduces us to a bishop who was capable of not just fully and capably managing his diocese, but was able to look beyond that, said the Reverend Graziano Battistella, who shepherded Scalabrini's cause for sainthood at a press conference. With this canonization, I think the Holy Father wants to offer the Church a model to imitate, Battistella said, a model for bishops, a model for the Church. Born in Cuomo, Italy in 1839, Scalabrini was appointed bishop at the age of 36 as millions of Italians were fleeing their homeland for Brazil, Argentina, and the United States, leaving behind their families, their culture, and their faith. In 1887, he founded the Missionaries of St. Charles Borromeo and later the Missionary Sisters of St. Charles. Migration was viewed negatively at the time, but Scalabrini took a different approach, seeing the upheaval as a chance to ease socioeconomic tensions at home while promoting cultural encounter and jump-starting progress. But he warned that without the proper laws and protections in place, migration could strip people of their roots and make them prey to human traffickers. Unlike many of his contemporaries, Scalabrini believed migration is not only a sacred human right, but a basic fact of human existence. According to Sister Nusa de Fatima Mariano, the superior of the Missionary Sisters of St. Charles, the answers that Scalabrini offered to the phenomenon of migration anticipated modern times. The bishop was especially sensitive to the role religious women play in helping migrants, and the sisters now run over 100 missions in the world, catering especially to women and children. The Scalabrinian Secular Missionary Women, founded in Switzerland in 1961, and other lay groups, live out the bishop's teachings in small local communities. The mission of St. Charles Borromeo, also known as the Scalabrian Fathers, operate parishes, hospitals, and welcoming centers in 33 countries. The Reverend Lenore Chiarello, Superior General of the Order, said that the missionaries champion the rights of migrants at borders and other critical places around the world. Pope Francis is sending a clear and solemn message to the Church and humanity as a whole. The migrants who first moved him and urged him to action remain a central theme for the Church and society, said Chiarello. Francis' first trip outside the Vatican, after being made pontiff in 2013, was to the Italian island of Lampedusa, where thousands of migrants are stranded in their journey across the Mediterranean Sea. Since then, the issue of migration has been a focus of his speeches, advocacy, and foreign trips. Francis waived the requirement for a second miracle attributed to Scalabrini, who was beatified by Pope John Paul II in 1997. Speaking on October the 6th to the Vatican Department in charge of making saints, Francis underlined the role of rank-and-file Catholics in determining saints. Sainthood, the Pope said, doesn't come primarily from the hierarchy, but from the faithful. That spirit of Scalabrini's vision continues today, speakers at the press conference pointed out, in the more than 50 welcoming centers for migrants in South America. Similar centers work to integrate immigrants in Italy, a first destination for many seeking to enter Europe. Jewel Civitelli, a member of the Scalabrinian Secular Women, who oversees an outpatient clinic at Rome's busy train station, told reporters at the press conference, "Together, we can discover ourselves belonging to a single human family." Our next piece comes from the Associated Press, published on October the 11th, entitled, "Pastor on Leave After Reportedly Giving Out I Heart Hot Youth Pastors Stickers," by Emily McFarlane Miller. A 35-year-old youth pastor at a South Carolina church has been placed on administrative leave after reportedly giving out stickers to students that read, "I Heart Hot Youth Pastors." The stickers caught attention online after they appeared in a social media post from someone who claimed their 14-year-old sister had received the sticker from the pastor. Fairview Baptist Church, a Southern Baptist congregation in Greer, South Carolina, announced that Corey Wall had been placed on administrative leave and will not be involved in student leadership while it conducts an investigation. "Our student pastor, Corey Wall, acknowledges that he made a poor decision and a mistake by making a sticker available that was offensive to some," reads a post by the church's personnel team and deacon officers on its website and Facebook page. The post did not describe the stickers Wall had made available. By the next day, Wall no longer appeared alongside church staff on Fairview's website, where he had been listed as student pastor only days before. "We take this matter very seriously and want to be proactive as we move forward," Our main goal is to always make our campus a safe place for anyone who attends, the church's statement reads. The original social media post, which blurred the name of the church involved, claimed a youth pastor had given I Heart Hot Youth Pastor stickers to students during midweek, the weekly gathering for students in sixth grade through high school at Fairview. Another social media post claimed to show an email exchange between Wall and someone expressing concerns about stickers being distributed at midweek. We're updating our church-wide database, and I encourage kids to come to see me to get a sticker and update their information, reads the email reportedly from Wall. The sticker was meant to poke fun of the I love hot mom culture. In hindsight, the sticker was a very poor taste and a mistake on my part. I do apologize for their distribution. We now have an article from the Religion News Service, published on the 11th of October, entitled PBS Documentaries Depict Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman's Paths of Freedom, Faith, written by Adele M. Banks. Frederick Douglass called the Bible one of his most important resources and was involved in black church circles as he spent his life working to end what he called the peculiar institution of slavery. Harriet Tubman sensed divine inspiration amid her actions to free herself and dozens of others who had been enslaved in the American South. The two abolitionists are subjects of a twin set of documentaries, Becoming Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman, Visions of Freedom, co-productions of Maryland Public Television and Firelight Films, and released by PBS in October. I think that the faith journey of both Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass were a huge part of their story, Stanley Nelson, co-director with Nicole London of the two hour-long films, said in an interview with Religion News Service. Religion for both Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass was the foundation in many ways of who they were. The films, whose production took more than 3 years, in part due to the COVID-19 hiatus, detail the horrors of slavery that both Tubman and Douglass witnessed. Tubman saw her sister being sold to a new enslaver and torn away from her children. A young Douglass hid in a closet as he watched his aunt being beaten. They each expressed beliefs in the providence of God playing a role in the gaining of their freedom. Scholars in both films spoke of the faith of these original abolitionists, as University of Connecticut historian Manisha Sinha called people like Tubman, who took to pulpits and lecterns as they strove to end the ownership of members of their race and sought to convince white people to join their cause. The Bible was foundational to Douglass as a writer, orator, and activist, Harvard University scholar John Stauffer told Religion News Service, expanding on his comments in the film about the one-time lay preacher. It influenced him probably more than any other single work. Stauffer said the Holy Book, which shaped Douglass's talks and writings, was the subject of lessons at a Sunday school he organized to teach other slaves. It's possible to appreciate or understand Douglass without recognizing the enormous influence the Bible had on him and his extraordinary knowledge of it, Stauffer added. Actor Wendell Pierce provides the voice of Douglass in the films, quoting him saying in an autobiography that William Lord Garrison's weekly abolitionist newspaper, The Liberator, took a place in my heart second only to the Bible. The documentary notes that Douglass was part of Baltimore's African Methodist Episcopal Church circles that included many free black people. Scholars say he met his future wife, Anna Murray, who encouraged him to pursue his own freedom in that city. The AME Church was central in not only creating a space for African Americans to worship, but creating a network of support for African Americans who were committed to anti-slavery, said Georgetown University historian Marcia Chatelain in the film. The Tubman documentary opens with her words, spoken by actress Alfrey Woodard. God's time is always near, she says, in words she told writer Edna Dow Littlehill Cheney around 1850. He set the North Star in the heavens. He gave me the strength in my limbs. He meant I should be free. Tubman, who early in life sustained a serious injury and experienced subsequent seizures and serious headaches, often had visions she interpreted as signposts from God, said Rutgers University historian Erica A. Dunbar in the film. The woman known as Moses freed slaves by leading them through nighttime escapes and later as a scout for the Union Army in the Civil War. She never accepted praise or responsibility, even for these great feats, Dunbar said. She always saw herself as a vessel of her God. But nevertheless, praise for Tubman came from Douglas, who noted in an 1868 letter to her that while his work was often public, hers was primarily in secret, recognized only by the heartfelt God bless you from people she had helped reach freedom. Nelson, a religiously unaffiliated man who created films about the mission work of the United Methodist Church early in his career, said the documentary helped shed light on the importance faith held for Tubman. It's something that most people don't know, and so many people who see the film for the first time are kind of surprised at that, he said in an interview. She felt she was guided by a divine spirit, and the spirit told her what to do. The Douglas documentary and the Tubman documentary, available to stream for free for 30 days after the original airing on PBS.org and PBS video app. After streaming on PBS website and other locations for a month, the films, which include footage from Maryland's Eastern Shore, where both Douglas and Tubman were born, will be available on PBS Passport. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the Religion to the North Carolina Reading Service.